Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Steelers Football. I'm Bob Labriola, joined, as always, by Mike Persuda of the DVE Morning Show. Heading to California, Mikey. Big weekend in California for the AFC North.
As Led Zeppelin might say, going to California.
Going to California. Thank you for...
California, here we come.
Yes.
Loading up the truck and moving to Beverly, so to speak.
Yeah, hills, that is. Swimming pools, movie stars.
And another hardball.
Well, there you go. The importance of this, obviously, this weekend, the Baltimore Ravens traveling to Southern California Sunday night against the San Diego Chargers. What's that place called? Qualcomm? Is that, or did they
used to be? Honest to God, do not keep track anymore. Stadiums are called.
Yeah. Can't.
No time for it, no patience with it.
Yeah.
It's Jack Murphy Stadium.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's what it used to be. And the Steelers, of course, Monday Night Football. And it's still called Candlestick Park, by the way. For a game against the 10-3 49ers. I don't know, you're not buying that 10-3, huh?
No, and I looked at the schedule again the other day, and there really isn't a signature win on there.
At Philly.
Yeah, but the Eagles aren't very good this year.
I know, but after October the 2nd, they were still not, you know, I don't know.
The fraud hadn't been exposed yet.
Yes. But impressed me for that team.
Record-wise, what's the best team they beat, the New York Football Giants?
Yes.
I don't think the New York Football Giants are all that either. And I think the 49ers are at a place. There is ebb and flow, ups and downs, whatever you want to. However you want to assess it, to a season, not everybody's firing on all cylinders all the time. And this team, for whatever reason, maybe it's the factor that you've alluded to. Maybe they're all a little beat up, banged up, just kind of out of sorts physically. Maybe it's a team that doesn't know how to act now that it's won and the pressure's on. But did not play a good game against Arizona. Out of sync, out of sorts. And... granted, you would expect that there'd be a little more motivation on a Monday night at home against the Pittsburgh Steelers than maybe there would against the Arizona Cardinals after you've just clinched. But it is not an intimidating team.
Let me say this. You know, I think that the 49ers might be an example of a team that over the course of an NFL season is going to find its level. I think if on September the 1st, if someone would have come to you and said, or Jim Harbaugh, and said, you know, you have an 11-5 football team here in San Francisco this year, you'd think, wow, that's pretty good. That would be a very nice improvement under the first-year program of this guy, blah, 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 because, hey, they hadn't even been 500 in, what, a long time.
It's been a while.
So I just think, you know, I don't think the 49ers are a 13-3 team or even 12-4. I think they're kind of finding their level. So, you know, we'll see what happens over these last three games after the Steelers. You know, they are at Seattle and at St. Louis. So
Seattle might not be a day to beach all of a sudden.
You think they're still going to be playing hard?
They still think they're in it.
Well, the thing about for San Francisco, though, you know, that's like going to Baltimore for them. You know what I mean? It's not a long – it's because when we think of going to Seattle,
but
it's
I'm
like,
saying
oh, my
the
God.
The Seahawks, talk about finding levels. Remember beginning of the year I said that Seattle defense is pretty good. Offensively, they got problems without Sidney Rice. Now, he's gone again. But they figured out how to get Marshawn Lynch some yards. And they're playing with energy and emotion. Pete Carroll's got those guys still – you know, realistic or not, he has them believing –
that they're still in it.
And that, you know, that's a tough venue to play in, whether you're coming from across the street or across the country. It's very loud, and the Seahawks tend to play a lot better there than they do anywhere else.
Well, maybe they end up being 11-5.
But I remember talking about that Seattle team in week 2. Say, hey, defensively, this is a good outfit. Offensively, they should not be able to hurt the Steelers because of a lack of weaponry. And I look at 49ers probably the same way, Bob.
You know,
or at least similar assessment.
Yeah, let's go with the lack of weaponry first right now. Yeah, I agree with you. The 49ers are a good running team. The power running. I mean, Frank Gore is an all day kind of guy.
Yeah, not right now. He's not.
Well,
he's a half the time kind of guy.
Well, yeah, he's a half the games kind of guy. But if you get him on a day, I mean, and I think you kind of have to assume that you're getting him if they're putting him out there. You know, a reasonable facsimile of, you know, what the real Frank Gore is. And when you approach a guy like him, you know, he has 1,000 yards already, 4.5 a carry, 6 touchdowns. I mean, even if he's only half the time guy, that all of a sudden seems to make me even a little more nervous, maybe.
Well, but here's why I say that. I understand his numbers are great, but he was lights out early in the season. He has not had a 100-yard game in 5 consecutive games. This is for a team that runs the football first and foremost. And against the Arizona Cardinals last Sunday, he had 10 carries, and Kendall Hunter, a fourth-round rookie from Oklahoma State, had 8 carries. He just doesn't look right to me. He's not injured to the extent that he's not appearing in the games, but he's out there, and then they put the other guy in. Then he's out there, and then they put the other guy in. For a guy of his pedigree, he shouldn't be trading carries, basically, with a rookie. Now, he averaged 7.2 against the Cardinals because he broke a long touchdown. But he only had 10 carries in the game. And this is a game they were winning into the fourth quarter when they should have been running it. Something's not right with Frank Gore.
Okay.
Not afraid of Frank Gore.
Okay.
Not treating Frank Gore like Jim Brown or Adrian Peterson or
I don't see that there's any
– Or even Ray Rice. I don't think he's going to get 25 touches.
Well, what are they going to do with the ball then?
They're going to give it to Kendall Hunter half the time.
Oh, but they're still going to run the ball.
Yes.
Okay. Because
and Kendall Hunter, who?
Well, I understand. But again, I mean, this is what they're going to do. You know, dealing with it. You know, we've seen the Steelers have success against power running teams, and we have seen them not have success. Well, you know, let's hope that who's ever holding the corners. You know, on the outsides of the steel, you know, on the perimeter, those outside linebackers, whoever they might be on Monday night, they are either good at it or healthy enough to do it. Because if not, you know, you can have problems. I mean, the 49ers offensive line, I don't think compares with certainly not with the Houston Texans, but it's not a bad group when it does its running the ball thing. You know, again, I think the respecting the run, or I'm not saying you fear it or, you know, get crazy in terms of getting yourself out of your comfort zone to try and stop it. But everybody better be in their gap, and they better fly to the football, because, you know, if they don't, I think that could turn into something of a problem.
And stay home, because Mike Tomlin's point about the wide receiver end arounds is well taken. They like that stuff.
Yeah, and Ted Ginn is, if he gets out on the perimeter, he has the speed to, you know, make you pay the ultimate price.
He can stick his foot in the ground, go the other way.
Yes.
Quickly.
Because really, you know, again, Alex Smith to me is just a guy, as the phrase goes in the league, personnel circles. I don't believe that he is a franchise quarterback. But what you know, I give Jim Harbaugh a lot of credit, and Alex Smith as well. He's managing things pretty decently this year. I mean,
you looking at the stats there.
Yeah,
check what it says under sacks.
Oh yeah, he takes a lot of sacks, but there's only 5 picks.
Yeah, but 39 sacks, Bob. That's more than the quarterback here.
Oh right. Oh, I know. And
I mean, nobody gets sacked more than Ben Roethlisberger because of the way he holds on to the football, except Alex Smith.
Yeah. And the other thing about
– they can't block it anymore.
And the other thing about Alex Smith, too, is if you move him off his spot, he is helpless. I mean, he does not have the ability to make a play on the move with his arm. Once you get him – it's almost like a high school – a lot of times quarterbacks, if you get those kids out of the pocket, their ability to make throws, or the throws they are able to make then, are greatly reduced. And usually you don't see that with a NFL quarterback. And
yeah, I think he loses his accuracy when he's out of the pocket or when he is under siege, which he has been often of late. It's not impossible. I saw him make a throw against the Cardinals. Their last snap was fourth and whatever. at about the two-minute warning. Their timeouts had been exhausted to get the ball back, so it was either going to be first down, still have a chance, or you're done. And he pulled one of those Fran Tarkenton go right, go left, go back to the right, and made a throw on the run to Kendall Hunter that should have been caught for a first down, and the kid dropped it. But those are very infrequent. When he starts moving around, when you get people in his face, it either gets batted down or it ends up kind of in the vicinity of the receiver, but not really where anybody can make a play on it, either DB or receiver. That's one of the reasons I suspect the picks are down, because sometimes he just throws an uncatchable ball.
Yeah, and there are pretty much only two receivers on the team. Or let me put it to you this way. There are only two players who have a lot of catches. Two guys you really have to worry about, wide receiver Michael Crabtree and the tight end Vernon Davis, who if Mike Singletary did anything during his tenure there as the coach, he made that kid a player.
Yeah, he motivated him.
Yeah.
Pretty good on the receiving end.
Yeah, and he's also, from what I understand, a much more mature part of that locker room and franchise and all that other stuff. So
I still don't think he wants to block anybody, but
none of us
will argue with me on that.
Well, very few of them do. You know, I mean, Heath Miller does it, Gronkowski does it, and he's just young yet, and so you know, he's just loving life.
After this record-setting touchdown reception season, maybe he'll be less concerned with that aspect of his game.
As Tomlin says, you know, as after the media starts licking him all over for a while, then you lose a lot of that taste for the you know, the dirty parts of the job. Yeah, and then on defense.
Yeah, Braylon's out to lunch.
We
didn't mention that.
I mean, seriously, he is almost a caricature of himself. The pass dropping, underachieving, whatever you want to say.
Targeted twice last week, zero receptions.
14 catches all year. I mean, I think David Johnson has almost 14 catches.
He's sneaking up on it if he's not there yet.
So, anyway, defense is pretty good, though. I don't think we're going to see Patrick Willis. Do you?
Well, I have no idea, but we haven't seen him for 7-plus quarters with that team, and it's a difference maker. He is all that, and you can tell when they don't have him.
What was his injury?
Hamstring.
You know, those are things, too. You know, that's one of those. This is something that I think that the 49ers coaches, one of these kinds of late season issues that they have to deal with now that they've never had to deal with before, as you mentioned.
What do you do with
Patrick Willis
vis-a-vis play or playoff readiness?
Yeah. I mean, and
it's a tough call,
and they don't know whether, you know, and they don't really know that much about him yet either. You know, it's only their first year with the team. They haven't had enough of a history with Patrick Willis and his hamstrings. I don't even know if it's an issue. And if it isn't, you know, then how are they looking at maybe doing everything they can so it doesn't become one? Then they baby it too much. You don't want to put them in too early. Should be interesting. I mean, as you mentioned, it's a different defense without Patrick Willis.
Most specifically, I think the other linebackers, they had a real problem against Arizona playing the cover two and the gap between the safeties and the linebackers. Red Skelton was able to exploit over the middle, get it over the backers and in front of the safeties, and then Larry Fitz and Early Doucette do their thing after they catch it. And there were Arizona didn't do a lot on offense in that game, but they popped three catch and run big plays. One of them went for a touchdown and the other two set up touchdowns. And I certainly think, Bob, if you're going to put Larry Fitz and Early Doucette on one side and Mike Wallace and Antonio Brown on the other, I think the ledger is at least equal.
Yes.
Fitz is probably the best player of that four, of those four.
Or Early Doucette's the worst.
Yes. And, you know, whoever ends up playing quarterback for the Steelers isn't going to have to stand back there for a seven-step drop and hold it, and the protection's not going to have to hold up long enough to get the ball deep to Mike Wallace. I think the crossing stuff's there, and I think both of those guys can do some damage on that. That's what they do, right?
Yeah, and I also would, you know, I wouldn't assume that the 49ers are going to shut down my running game either, even if Patrick Willis plays. I would make them show me that they're going to shut it down, because I think that there are some opportunities here, you know, for some ebb and flow, you know, thrust and parry, so to speak, in this game, as opposed to when you're playing a team like the Packers.
That's fencing, right?
Yes. The Packers.
That's with the Ape.
I don't know what the swords.
Yeah. One's an Ape and one's a foil, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, see?
I think.
Between the two of us, we pretty much have it covered. But I think
they should have painted those masks in fencing like the goalie mask.
Goalie mask.
It would have been a lot more interesting. You know, if a guy had flames coming out of his side of his head or something,
or just take the tips off the blades. You know, it's different. It's like the different. You know, the chicken and the pig with breakfast. Yes. One makes a contribution, the other makes a commitment. But you know, I don't think you're going to need to score on every possession in this game.
I don't think so either.
And you know, again, I would make them show me that they were going to shut down my run, because I don't know. I want to see them do it.
Yeah, and just protect the ball. This team has feasted on turnovers, takeaways, plus field position. If you don't make it easy for this offense, it's going to be challenged to score a lot of points. And the red zone's been terrible all year. You're a big red zone guy. They're 0 for their last 7 over the last 3 games. Haven't been higher than 50% since early October, that Philadelphia game. It's a long time.
Yeah.
Over 50% is not good red zone.
No, it's middle of the pack.
They haven't been over that since early October. I mean, that's a trend. That's who they are.
Yeah, that's a lot of field goals.
Great field goal kicker.
Yeah, Akers, he's attempted 42 field goals.
Six of seven from 50-plus.
I'm not arguing he's a really good kicker, but 42 field goals is a lot of attempts.
Many.
And they also, as you met, you know, you said feasting on the takeaways, you know, 18 interceptions and 13 fumble recoveries. I don't know that the Steelers have 18 takeaways total.
14.
So, well, there you go. So
The only thing that really scares me about this team is the special teams. The kicker, if it's a close game, he can bang from way downtown. And Ted Ginn Jr. on punt and kickoff returns.
Yeah, he has a touchdown each way so far.
I'm telling you, you hold your breath watching this guy do it. And even when he gets 5 yards, it's like, oh, why? You know.
Yeah.
If he gets started, look out.
And
they cover very well, too.
You know, one of the things that the Steelers are kind of, I won't say worried about, but, you know, working on is, you know, in punt coverage, you have your two gunners and then you have everyone else. Well, they're kind of worried about the everyone else, because the everyone else hasn't had to make hardly any tackles at all, because the two gunners make them all. But, you know, once you start relying on that, I mean, it still is, you don't want to go against Ted Ginn Jr. with just two guys trying to tackle him.
If that is, in fact, the case, I might think about kicking it out of bounds against this guy.
Kapanos has been doing well. You can't do that on kickoffs. Maybe Sweezum can kick it all the way to Canada.
It's not that far.
No, it isn't. Especially once you get it up into the prevailing westerlies there. That's a meteorological term there for you. See, fencing, yeah. Meteorology. I think we're about done then.
I think we got a couple. No, it's a decent team, and I don't want to poo-poo the 49ers, but I think this is a very winnable game. The Steelers going to have to play well to win it, but what is it, 8 out of 9 since Houston for the Steelers? And the one exception is that Baltimore game that just got away. Well, they call almost winning, I know, but they seemed, at least before that Cleveland game, seemed to be finding a stride and a rhythm collectively and starting to establish who they were and what they were about.
Yeah.
And I think that can continue.
And as I mentioned on the DVE Morning Show today, I really, you know, one of the characteristics that all these, you know, the recent vintage Steelers Super Bowl teams, either winning it or getting there, have had is this, you know, ability to just rally around adversity and injuries and just overcome some things that you just, you know, can't even imagine them overcoming. And this game is kind of setting up like that, with the suspension and the injuries and who the injuries are to. I really think that this is going to reveal a lot about this Steelers team. And if they win this game, I don't care if they have to go into the playoffs as a wild card. I mean, I would hope, you know, you would like to get the bye because, as we've always talked about, it's one fewer game and you get to play at home. But if they
plus
can go,
we deserve the week off.
Well, that's the see. That's almost goes unsaid because
no, I want that, I want it to be said.
Okay. Well, everybody should know that. But yes, yeah. Mikey is right. We deserve a week off.
And
but,
you know, the stuff you're talking about, we have seen.
Yes.
Super Bowl last year, Marquise Pouncey didn't play. Doug Legursky did at center, and the world didn't end. In fact, the offense functioned. Maybe a couple plays different, they win that game. You know, the world didn't stop spinning. We've seen Jason Worlds look like an actual outside linebacker in the National Football League that's capable of making plays. So maybe we'll see that again. We've seen Ryan Mundy playing well. Last year, this team went 3-1 without Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
So it's not as if they're going to be hoping for something that is totally uncharacteristic or unforeseen. The guys that are going to play, if they play, have played.
Oh, yeah, and they have played here. Too. That's with these teammates and under these systems. So yeah, but there is also an intangible, you know, the rally around intangible, for lack of a creative term. And you know, I want to
circle the wagon, stay on the Cowboy movie.
Yeah, thing. Well, yeah, that's for Tunch. I leave that for him because he's the Cowboy movie expert. But
the head coach apparently has been boning up.
Yeah, I mean, he's a...
What do you think his favorite Cowboy movie is? I got to ask him that one of these days.
I don't know.
It's got to be a John Wayne flick or Clint Eastwood, right?
Well, yeah. To me, those are the best Cowboy movies, but I mean, I'm not I wouldn't consider myself an expert in the genre. Some of those John Ford Westerns, you know, in terms of the, you know, movie history and stuff, I mean, those were epic.
Wayne.
Yeah, in the, you know, in the... Based on the technology that they had at the time, I mean, there was no; those were actually all people on horses, not something they just created in a, you know, on a computer screen. But anyway, we digress. So what we're saying is, this game is winnable for the Steelers, and you know, if they do win, I think it indicates that they are a legitimate championship contender.
And here's the other really cool thing about the weekend. You start watching football and you're sort of projecting in September. And all right, are my preseason expectations going to be met? Did I gauge this team right? And you see October, oh, boy, it looks like Terrell Suggs is going to be hard to block. That might be an issue. Or, boy, Phillip Rivers looks like he's having an off year. Maybe San Diego's not going to be in the mix this year. All that projection stuff's out the window now. It either happens or it doesn't. There is an immediate and tangible consequence to the results
and reward too.
Yes, and hey, the Ravens lost, the Steelers won. Back in control of what?
Their fate.
Or Ravens won, but the Steelers won. Still a horse race. Things are happening now that really matter, and that is the best part of the football season to me.
That's Mike Pursuta. I'm Bob Labriola. Thanks for listening. Talk to you when we get back from San Francisco.